day number 25 of the Enlightenment study. And yesterday, Michael was reading from the book, The End of Suffering, that he has written, and he just keeps writing on it, and so it has expanded again, and so he's going to read some more today once he gets on. And we hope that you're enjoying the study and comparing the Aramaic to what we've been taught the scriptures say. And we did have one question come in by email, and so Michael's going to start off with that question when he gets on, and we will go from there. So if you do have a question, whether it's about the Aramaic, about the Enlightenment, or anything else, forgiveness process, press one, raise your hand, and let us support you. Hi, Michael. Can't hear you.
Hey there, dear heart.
There you are.
Welcome. Welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. And I actually, as I'm reading this section that came out of working on the Enlightenment book many years ago, I wrote more than I had realized, and I'm going to continue with it because it's about creating a foundation to process differently, think differently, to actually enter into process. And in this work, we define processing as the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less comes up. So that processing is a transformation that's taking place, or a transmutation on an energy level. If I go back to my physics study, transmutation is the changing of one energy to another. So, and we have the sun, and we have a plant, and this plant has the ability to transmute the nutrients in the leaf in the presence of the sun into chlorophyll. So that's a transmutation, or a transformation. You look at the word form being what exists in the world now as an energetic form. Transform goes beyond the form. So if there's no sun present, then there's no chlorophyll in the plant. There has to be at least light, perhaps not necessarily sun, but there has to be light. So a plant that exists in darkness doesn't ever transmute in the substances or the energetic patterns within it into chlorophyll. And I'm expressing that because we have a question that came in. And the question, I'll say, Audrey, I don't have translation work for what your question is, but I'll offer from the point of view of my work with the Aramaic and tying it back in with physics and such, because that's an important key. You know, to me, the man Yeshua had nothing to do with theology. He was not a theologian any more than, let's say, a plant biologist. Of course, you know, chlorophyll is an important thing, so a plant biologist is really about the sun. That doesn't mean sun worshiper. It is, the sun's part of the process. And Yeshua, as a physicist, as a psychologist, as a psychiatrist, as a geneticist, is not a theologian any more than the plant biologist is a sun worshiper. Yes, plant biologist brings the sun into the equation, into the conversation. Yeshua brings the creator into the creation, the light. He says, you know, you are the light. You could say you are the transmuter. You are the power under which things are transmuted in the world. He says, I am the light. And then without changing anything but the pronoun, he says the same thing about you. And if we're in that state where we're living as active present love, where rather than love being some kind of a word that has to do with some venial form of approval or sexual athletics or putting your head on a chopping block so somebody knows that your sacrifice means they let you love them, all of that fake stuff about love. But one of the practices Yeshua presented was that of bringing conscious, active, present love forward into physiology, into the world. And he gave formulas for doing that. So the question that was asked is, Yeshua says to a woman, "Don't touch me, I have not yet ascended to the Father." And again, I don't have translation work based on that one, but my offering would be that here was a man who was in process of transfiguring his energy system, for want of a better term. Remember that because our mind can formulate a structure called a body, doesn't mean there's such a thing as a body out there. If we listen, you get a foundation out of this. If we listen to Einstein, he says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So my offering would be that in that case, he's going through a state of transformation. He's taking the work of removing the lower frequencies in his structure, perhaps genetic information, I don't know, of having those transmuted by having taken on a new ability to capture the active energy of love in which we live, move, and have our being. Remembering that in Aramaic, the word prayer means to set a trap for God, which sounds kind of weird in our language, but when you think of it as energy and energy signals being captured, you know, my TV antenna on the roof of the house, my favorite station being channel 2, my TV antenna is a trap for channel 2. It is an energy device that, when properly aligned, properly structured, captures channel 2 and brings in a powerful signal where I get a clear picture and clear sound of what channel 2 is broadcasting. So when we come into the world, we move through an energy field called love. And we're told, in him we live, move, and have our being. And the him is probably not a proper word to use, but saying it sounds kind of disrespectful. In the unfathomable, unknowable energy field that we call the Creator, we live, move, and have our being. And we're designed to capture that, to be in prayer 24/7, 365. But if carbon-based memory's got some other ideas, i.e. if you have a genetic inheritance, a cultural influence that includes hostility or fear, you're going to have to go into a formational process to remove that. If you've been in one of our that I give the first aid is, you know, we're here to open if you touch me. So in an intensive, you know, somebody goes into process that transformation literally, and everybody knows, may not know exactly what it is, may not have the brain cells, but knows it. Wow, there's something really powerful happening here with this person. And you'll remember the instruction I give in the intensive is, if that starts, I'm going to ask you to just be quiet and be with what's happening. Breathe and be with what's happening. And if you have a burning question, like you're standing over there, we're working with this person that's going through a major processing, and you know, in that space there are times where there hasn't been a word spoken in 10 minutes. That person's in such deep process. That would be like unto the state of Yeshua saying, "Don't touch me." There's a process happening here. And that energy field in which we live, move, and have our being is designed, I'd offer, to run to be the master energy that organizes, turns into organic structure, and reflects in our forms. However, if engaged in other energetic patterns, i.e., again, via genetics, via cultural programming, by childhood traumas, etc., then a different energy is, at that moment, running our energy system. And there's a veil, barrier, the barrier between the subconscious. Physiology. So when a veil opens and those energetic patterns are being transformed, the most powerful thing that everybody can do is just stand back and be the space of conscious, active, present love. And unless you're in as clean and clear a space as what this person is heading for, hands off, don't touch. If you're in the space of totally in alignment with the transformation that's happening, then we might say, okay, let's get that person to lay down on the table and breathe, and let's all put our hands on them. When everybody's aligned with that, we're not going to ask somebody who's over there, you know, in a snit because they're not getting the attention energy. So that would be my take. And so in this energy field, we live, move, and have our being, and if there are other energetic patterns that are less than the active presence of love, then we're going to have to go through that transformation process, through that healing process. And so when we're open to and can allow truth to pour into us, truth is like the sun that creates the transformation of everything that is less than itself. Active present love, being synonymous with truth. Remember, they said the Creator's name was love, and they said the Creator's name was truth, interchangeable words. That when I can open the veil of my own temple and allow that energy to come in, I mean, you'll oftentimes see people, especially when we're doing still point breathing, you'll see arms and legs popping, head, body moving. All place. Some translation from the Aramaic. That's just my sense from doing this work. And so you asked the question, the second question was, what is understood to be ascension in Aramaic? Again, I don't have that based on translation, but that would be my description of ascension. I'm going from lower energies. I've opened myself. I've loosened my grip on the lower energies. I've opened myself to this higher presence of love, and I'm inviting it to come in. And as I breathe, it transforms every lower energy in me. The end result, if we were to look at somebody's field, if we could look at, let's imagine we've got a device that looks at a person's energy field and determines whether they are in the deepest, darkest pits of hell. They're at a one. Or whether they're in the state of absolute bliss and enlightenment, they're at a 10. If we did that, then someone who's going through the ascension process might be at a 5. They're breathing, they're open, the energy's moving, and when they complete the process, they're at a 10. That would be ascension. They'd be raising the frequency of the structure. And then your final question is, could you also please explain how the process of resurrection occurs? That would be what I would offer, is that resurrection is, you know, if you remember, Yeshua talked about allowing the dead to bury the dead. Most people are walking around doing the regular game of life, hostility, fear, grief, pain, trauma, drama. I would offer what Yeshua would say, those are people who are dead. They're not awake to the truth of who they are as love. That's not the governing energy within their physiology. And so resurrection would be opening the space where the light comes on, where being awakens, where, you know, when he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. What's he saying? I mean, how do you die and then live? If you are identified with your non-being are, then you're dead. And when you let go of identification with the non-being mind, the self, you come back to life. And the objective is to truly be alive, to truly live as a human being. So that would be my definition of resurrection. And then coming back to live again after being, how is that possible? Well, if we think of life as the body, then when the body stops functioning, we call that death. But if we recognize that that's not life and that's not who we are, then we step into a different energy. So physiology can be clinically dead because the animating energy of being, the created essence, the soul, is disconnected. The animating energy is disconnected from form. They've actually done some research where they've weighed on very sensitive equipment people dying, and they've come up with, if I remember correctly, that the change in weight at the moment of that last breath is about 3/5 of an ounce, concluding that the animating energy, the soul, whatever you want to call it, the created essence, has some mass to it. So that would be my take on all three of those topics. I hope that answers your questions. If it doesn't, and you're listening, push one and let's talk about it, see if there's any more clarity I can bring, or if any of that brings up any thoughts for anyone else, push one and let's talk about it. And while we're waiting to see if the hand does go up, one of the objectives of this work is to support people understanding what processing is and to be able to step into processing. Again, which would be, many words would be quite interchangeable. Translation. Translation is to move from one dimension to another. Processing, to move from one state of energy to another. Ascension, to move from one state, from a lower state to a higher state of energy. Resurrection, bringing the animating influence in the form back into control and expression through the form. So, Miss Jeannie, do we have anything happening in chat room or anybody in the phone queue with a hand up, or should we just rock and roll?
You do have a hand up, and it's Miss Susan 610. You are on the air.
Hey, folks. Woo! Michael, that is amazing. I've never heard that take, as you call it, my take, of why Jesus said, don't touch me. But
yeah, it's like, don't get any interfering energy until I've completed this process.
Yeah, I love it. And it
kind of like I'm making jam. I'm making jam, and I don't want the kid with the dirty fingers to even stick his finger in the jam.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I have the Bible, George Lumps's translation from the Aramaic, and I know that a lot of this didn't get the adjustments he would have liked. But I've been using that as my text for a new chancel opera on the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, 22-26. This is the less known Jesus healing of the blind man, where he spits on his fingers and touches Jesus' eyes. Yeah. And so I was thinking, in any healing, my question is, in any healing process, probably involves something like that transformation. And Jesus did something that we humans can relate to because he used dirt, he used his fingers, but I don't think anybody else's dirty fingers would have done the trick. There's something about
and spit.
All right. You know, having
but you remember
someone
he didn't
singing,
take credit for it.
No,
we didn't
say it was him. Right. Okay. I feel as if you just threw a wrench into my whole thought process. Did you think that I thought that he did it? I mean, what are you thinking?
Well, when you said, I don't think anybody else's mud and spit would have done the job, I would probably agree with you. You know, he becomes the energy of support, and if somebody's got a deep transmutation that needs to take place, like blindness, that's mm-hmm. pretty energy moving. It's going to take a whole lot of support, and to mm-hmm. be clean and clear enough to be that space to support that work that the blind man was ready to do, definitely would be take a great deal of clarity and purity.
So this passage is very short. Can I read it aloud? It's like
four verses.
Okay. And he came, Jesus, to Bethsaida, and they brought to him a blind man, they mean the disciples, and they besought him to touch him. So he had already been touching people and healing. Anyway, continuing. And he took the blind man by the town, and he spat on his arms and put his hands on him and asked him what he saw. And the man looked and said, I see men like trees walking. And Jesus put his hands over the man's eyes again, and he was restored and saw everything clearly. And Jesus sent him to his house, saying, do not even enter into the town, nor tell it to anyone in the town. So, but my question, I just wanted to read that in case anything jumped out in those words to you so they could sort of retell me the story. I'm having to jump start. I've been stuck. I've been lying around, walking around, trying to write music. It's not coming. Something that comes kind of stinks and I throw it away. It's not anything that I would want to keep yet. And I'm waiting for the log jam to bust open. And when you were talking about, yeah, go ahead. I can tell you're ready to talk.
Well, I had just checked. I was going to ask if you knew, and two, if you'd seen it, that the next series of The Chosen was in movie theaters this past weekend.
No, I haven't. Did they do that scene?
They did that scene, yes. And I was just looking to see if it was still on. And what they did was episodes 1, 2, and 3 this weekend. And I just looked in the local theater here to see if that was still on. And I see, and I didn't know this, they didn't even make this announcement. We went and saw it this weekend, somebody's recommendation. But now they've got season 4, 5, and 6 on. I was not aware of that, but they're doing it now, the second half of the new Chosen season. So I assume that means 1, 2, and 3 are gone where they did that scene.
And do you think it might go to Netflix? I know Netflix is... Oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what the schedule is, but yeah.
Yeah, oh, I'd love to see it.
So I wonder if, because, you know, metaphors open a space, and if you were to look at this blindness as being a metaphor, not for physical blindness, but for spiritual blindness, mm-hmm. you know, sure. having the eyes to see it, going from the space where not having the eyes to see, we do not perceive, not having the ears to hear, we do not hear, then maybe right. there's a way to bring that into expression through that parable.
I just looked and it says that 1, 2, and 3 will show after it's debuted in the theaters. So it should be coming out real soon.
Oh boy, that's
might be on the app now.
What season is that, Michael?
4.
6, I believe.
No,
4.
It's season 4.
Yeah,
and they've got
4.
7 seasons planned.
Wow. Yeah.
So you might check the app and it might be there, but you know, when I use the metaphor of the sun and the chlorophyll, maybe somehow that could come together and you could turn the metaphor of blindness, being about not physical blindness, but spiritual blindness, into seeing in a new way.
Oh,
rather than through the old brain cells.
Oh, yeah. That is so true. And I don't know whether I'm going to attempt pencil opera, because they are pretty, these are for use in the worship service in place of the sermon. And a certain amount of midrash is welcome. But I'm not sure how far I could go with that. I know what you're saying, and I think about it for myself. When I was very young, in my early 20s, I was going blind, and I became to the point where I couldn't read or drive or see very well, and no doctor diagnosed it. I saw seven doctors, and the sixth one said, "I think you need a psychiatrist," and I was sure that was true. But then my father-in-law...
Thanks a lot, pal.
I know. But by then, I was thinking, am I nuts, you know? But then my father-in-law, who lived in Washington, said, "I have a great eye doctor down here. I'm going to bring you down." I went down, walked into his office, and across the room, he said, "I know what's wrong." And it was a corneal distortion, severe corneal distortion from using non-gas permeable contact lenses, which were being prescribed back then, and being brown-eyed.
Right.
I didn't have the nerves that a blue-eyed person. I was wearing them much too long. I was in college. Sometimes I would fall asleep with them in. Very bad. The eyes were deprived of oxygen.
Deprived of oxygen,
Yeah. And so he did one, and it was just miraculous. So I have a particular affinity for this story.
Blind, for
doctor,
sure. I hear that.
Yeah. Man, so nevertheless, I'm just waiting for the muse to show up, and I'm hoping they will. So,
we'll tap in and hold the space for the muse and the right metaphor, the right expression to come.
Yeah, and if you have a thought, too. I mean, I love this story, and it isn't the story. The more famous one is, was this man born blind because his parents did something bad, or is he bad?
Right.
You know, but this one's much shorter.
Actually, that's the one that is in the Chosen. I was mistaken.
Oh.
It wasn't the smaller situation. It was the one where they asked that question.
That's not surprising,
so,
since this is much shorter and less dramatic, although still I want to say so. Okay,
well, I'll look forward to hearing what you see.
Or hearing what I hear. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? So, yeah, your book reminds me of what Dr. Tim's been talking about on his show, is Elizabeth Gilbert has been practicing a kind of journal writing where she calls it prayer for two, prayer not only from your end, but from God's end. A dialogue with love. She calls it love, not God.
Right.
She's been practicing this for about 20 years or 25 years. And there was a couple of podcasts done on it where the hosts of the podcast, Glennon Doyle and her sister Amanda and Glennon's partner, her name escapes me at the moment, but anyway, they decided they were going to have a letter. They were going to write a letter from love to themselves, and the results are amazing. And Dr. Tim's been reading them over. He read the most recent one, which is the most mind-blowing one of all, on his radio show. It's like God is right there, ready to talk, if we will just listen. But most of us think God isn't there, or really isn't going to say anything, or that we have to figure out what God's going to say, and we've got to be one step ahead, and all this other stuff. But what you're doing with your book, Michael, you're going through the enlightened book, and having your dialogue, it is very similar, I think.
Cool. Well, you know, bottom line is all you have to do is be out of your mind to be able to listen to that
That's
direct
right.
input, you know. So.
That made me think of...
maybe that's a... Go ahead, sweetie.
There's also a movie, Will Smith was in it, called Collateral Beauty, where he needed answers and he wrote letters to love, to time, and to death. Have you seen that one?
No.
It's an excellent movie.
Yeah,
that's
right. Powerful.
It's called Collateral Beauty.
Well, I've got the Collateral Beauty. Thanks. All right. Well, I'll get off, Michael, so you can keep reading. But
all right, young lady. You have a blessed one.
Yeah.
We'll
thanks.
Hold space
you
for that
too.
Muse. All right. Take
you.
Care. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye.
There's no other hands up, so continue with your reading.
Okay. Let's go for it. So we finished up yesterday, and actually there's more in this book than I remembered having written. I had done more than I realized. So we'll carry on because it's a direct result of the interaction, and I think it addresses how to be that space, how to listen in a different way. Again, one of the things, the objective being to get the mind out of the way. Once the mind is given answers to its questions, it's able to shut up. So, I'm going to just finish with the last page or so that we finished with yesterday, or start with that. And he talks about Paul. Suffice to say, mind that has not done its own work is appropriately described by Paul when he says, therefore, thou art inexcusable, O man, whoever thou art that judgest, for when thou judgest another, thou condemnest thyself, for thou that judgest does the same things. Yeshua goes on and says, humankind is not a thief more judgment, especially from one thinking they represent me. For one who condemns is simply caught in an error corresponding to the error of the person they condemn. It's time for humanity to get the truth. I can deliver the tools for each individual to manifest the love of God in their lives and the lives of those who could not do it for themselves, whatever their error. Clearly, I did not come to deliver reasons for war, separation, dogma, condemnation, and fault-finding. I said, and if any man hear my words and believe not, I judge him not, for I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. You know, in the place where we're told it says, I came not to destroy the law, but to, what is the translation that's normally given? Oh, but to fulfill. In Aramaic, it doesn't say to fulfill. It says to add unto your understanding of the law. So, just to expand on that, he that rejects me and receives not my words already has one that judges him. The words I've spoken, the same shall judge him in the last day. In other words, and today, every day is the last day. Today is the day of judgment, i.e., not of somebody standing back and going, oh, I'm going to condemn you to this, but the day where whatever our creative process is comes into expression, comes into manifestation. That's Judgment Day. It's not some big threatening thing that's going to happen sometime later, and Yeshua is not involved. He's not taking on that job. He was really clear when he was here before it wasn't his job, and he wasn't interested in doing it, and he's not waiting for, you know, thousands of years to pass by, and then he's going to come and sweep down and do it as those who work with the mind of man. and the command I was given is life everlasting. And he informs us that's what he came to speak about. I came to save the world mind from its own insanity and is carried on with all its old conflicts, family squabbles, wars, and reasons for separation, religious condemnation, etc., as though I had never spoken. Killing. Psychological. Emotional. And physical is continued as if I had demonstrated nothing. Only now, it's often done in my name. Your world is in danger of self-destruction, much of it over theological conflict and debate. It's time for the insanity done in the name of love to end, and for the work I demonstrate to actually be carried out. It's time for a suffering humanity to experience the active presence of the love of God. Whoever they are, whatever their form of suffering, whatever they've done, whatever they need to be condemned for, according to the world. Condemnation, studying, debate, and war will not bring healing, but the active presence of love will. My heart opened and tears began to flow, and I could feel years of old trauma melting away instantly. Susan, this is what I would think the blind man was going through at that moment. In that same instant, without conscious prompting from me, my mind shifted into excitement. Could it be, after all, you know, at this point I've been studying, I thought studying was the key for decades. Could it be, after all these years of study, I'm only beginning to hear the truth? And here it is, my opportunity to ask directly. I was awestruck. So as often happens for us when we're functioning as non-humans, or we still have a non-human mind active in us, once a new insight comes, then the mind, resonated by that new level of empowerment, brings up its next objection, its next unresolved conflicting energy. That's why you so often hear me say, you got to be out of your mind. You have to get your mind to the point where it shuts up. You're not locked in and trying to figure something out, but literally that you actually get to that point of, you know, the instruction was given, be still and know. Mind can't know. Only being can know. So I went from this state of excitement and elation and to then almost as quickly my mind went into fear. With an abruptness that even startled me, I blurted out, what about the church fathers? Certainly they understood. Yeshua says, pay attention to me. How do you expect to find the meaning of my teachings when you ignore my instructions and look for me where I am not? He captured my full attention. I spoke, taught, and thought in Aramaic, not Greek. Perhaps my input, the meaning I put forward in the context in which I originally meant them, might be more valuable than those Greek experts. You honestly think if my students did not grasp the depth of what I taught after 3 years of personal instruction from my own lips, that the Greek minds that established their Western traditions had a chance of grasping what I alone understood and have been able to apply? And of course, you know, just think about who else has produced the fruit that he did. A 2,000 years ago, my message was beyond the comprehension of the world mind. It is time for my message to be understood. My sole desire for you is that you believe me when I tell you, he that believeth in me, the works that I do, he shall do also. And greater works than these shall he do. And that it isn't just a mind intellectual belief, but enters into the process of transformation and is living those words. And then we come to a next chapter, the core problem being waxed gross, which is a quote from the scriptures that we'll get into. I started to grasp for the first time what he meant when he said, "Therefore I speak to them in parables, because they see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand." And then is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, who said, "By hearing you shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing you shall see and not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross." Go back and read Isaiah, and that's what Isaiah says. He categorizes a problem. "And their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart." To realize that your mind, because of your belief that you already understand me, limits your ability to hear my deeper teachings, that your mind is waxed gross. A heart waxed gross, as Isaiah called it, is a mind hypnotized by its own internal messages, its ability to hear stifled by the simple presence of hostility and or fear. A heart waxed gross can see life only through the lens of its own patterned limitations. A person who is waxed gross is one so imbued with the idea that their problems are external that they are innocent victims, and that their minds cannot even generate a reality that demonstrates awareness that they're involved in their lives. Such a mind is so entangled in turmoil, the turmoil of anger, fear, rage, guilt, and condemnation, that everything it sees is skewed. The mind waxed gross actively resists producing a reality that reflects actual responsibility. This is waxed gross. The solution lies in undoing, that is, forgiving the big lie that all the problems are out there, and building the brain cells for functioning out of actual responsibility. It's interesting. We'll often hear people and like, "Well, I know what the problem is, I just didn't solve it." No. The very nature of being is that if the mind can yield up, if the space is there for the underlying problem to surface, it is automatically transformed by the presence of love. So if you think you know and it's not fixed, quote unquote, you're not done with it yet, it's because you don't know. Take it to the next level. Do the next worksheet and uncover the next level of what needs to be dealt with. Until you can live the first law, remember what the first law was? You're able to keep this filter in the frontal lobes of your brain open so that love is present in you totally and completely, continuously. So until you can live the first law, until the higher understanding of life that I'm presenting, until an awareness that matches or surpasses mind pervades it, your mind is so full of mistaken beliefs about life that, like the average human being that has not done the requisite inner work, my light cannot penetrate it. Invite my light to penetrate your mind. Until then, you are only capable of understanding at the lowest levels, because you are locked into the worldly definitions of my words. Don't expect to find the understanding I hold for my words in your culture's dictionaries. My meanings can only be written who has experienced the fullness of what I have to teach. Enmeshed in what it thinks it knows, a mind waxed gross, the world mind, cannot hear or understand what I taught. Why have there been so many atrocities committed by those who claim to be doing them in my name? Their minds are waxed gross. And some pretty gross things have been done in the name of Yeshua. To intimidate, to incite fear, to exalt suffering, to judge, to punish, to condemn to hell, under the mantle of my name is a perversion of my work and words. By those whose minds were waxed gross with the world's ways. Excuse me, I'm making some notes as we go. My purpose was to teach and demonstrate the power of staying connected to love, your essential nature, in any and every circumstance. This is what a true teacher of my work will express, even in the most dire situation. Until you understand and can do that, it cannot be said that in any way you represent me. If there's anything in your life that you cannot stay connected to love in the presence of, anything you cannot hold a space of love for, don't kid yourself into thinking you know what I taught. For that ability is the very foundation upon which all of my teaching rests. You must even be prepared to hold that space, as I did, for your own death. Have rotten for neighbor. In Aramaic, that means anyone you think about. And for self is the first law. This is the protocol for understanding me and the scriptures, the protocol which, when embodied, empowers you to fully comprehend and actually live out of my deepest teachings. Notice that I demonstrated how to express that protocol in very real terms the day of my crucifixion. When I said the second commandment in the law was, thou shalt have rachma for thy neighbor as thyself, I actually meant it. I taught that commandment not because it was a nice thing to do, but because it was a pathway to healing yourself and inoculating yourself against human insanity. Inoculating yourself against the mind of man and against all diseases. I did not go through that experience of crucifixion to demonstrate the excellence of suffering, sacrifice, and death, but to illustrate the power of living a life based in love. That was my intended message. I stood connected to my essential nature, love, while I faced being tortured and killed. I couldn't wait to respond. I broke in, yes, and because you did not fight and did not escape, when you had the chance, they killed you. Yeshua corrects me. That's your mind waxed gross in its own fear. You don't get it yet, Michael. No, I did not fight or run. Yes, because I did not fight or run, they, quote-unquote, killed me. Then came my opportunity, the purpose I came to Earth to fulfill. I demonstrated the power of conscious, active, present love, the protocol that I'm suggesting you live up to. It is love that resurrected and healed me. And it is the birthright of each of us to live connected to that love continuously. That was the only message I delivered throughout the entire course of my life. Everything I taught was to reconnect humanity to that one source, the Spirit of Truth. And anyone who hears and integrates that message will drop condemnation, fear, intimidation, and guilt, and heal themselves by simply forgiving and living out of the mind of love. I demonstrated the power of being connected to love, our essential nature, but it was invisible to them. You must, however, if you genuinely wish to represent me, embody that message. If you're going to understand and express what I taught, the only thing to learn is how to stay in harmony with your created nature, love, instead of being run by your fabricated nature, the one rooted in fear and hostility. Love is life itself. It is the source of our real power as human beings. It was so powerful that it restructured my torn body and restored it to life. Be aware that insecure outer authority is trapped in the world mind and in dogma promoted by those who did not understand will want to make me or themselves your source. But you must make contact with and learn to live out of your essential nature and your connection to source, not mine. My words indicated once again how difficult it is for the mind to hold to my instructions when you've been captured by the world mind in its imaginings. You must learn to manage your own mind and break off from being at the effect of the world. Here's another way in which I said it. I have yet many things to say to you, but you cannot hear it. Howbeit, when he, the spirit of truth, Ruka Dukudsha, has come, and we need to change that because in Aramaic, that elemental force is feminine. She will guide you into all truth. I have yet many things to say unto you, but you cannot now. Howbeit, when Ruka is come, she will guide you into all truth. Remember the definition of Ruka Dukudsha from Aramaic. She, a feminine elemental force, who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. That's all part of that transformation. That's all part of that resurrection. That's all part of ascension. That's the energy, the shift that takes place. The condition that will make that power active in you is the willingness to honor truth, no matter what it brings up in you. And to honor love so much that you will hold to it regardless of circumstance. And you can always tell who somebody's God is by what they turn to in their moments of stress. If you babble on about God and love and all that stuff, but under stress you turn to hostility or fear, got to get honest with yourself. That's your God. Like, stop pretending you have any concern for that one called love. Because you will turn to your gods in moments of stress. And you can tell exactly what they are. And for most people, it's their power persons. That's the dynamic that runs them. So this is the condition that will make that power active in you. Protocol, first order business, you know. Somebody goes to the doctor and the doctor says, oh yeah, you've got the ABC disease, and I know exactly how to take care of that. Here's the protocol. And you take the protocol and you look at the first line of it and you go, eh. Well, you know, the rest of it looks pretty good to me, but I'm not going to do that first one. Can you justifiably go back to the doctor and say his protocol didn't work? No, you didn't apply it. Why did Yeshua say the protocol? This is the 11 most important words ever spoken. This condition of Rachma in your mind, upon this and these two commandments hangs all the law and the prophets. This is the protocol he laid out. As I said, when that realization came, I got on the phone with everybody that I knew in the religious life, nuns, priests, ministers, rabbis, everybody that I knew, And in total, it was something over around 100 years of religious experience between all these different people. And not one of them had a clue there was a protocol. Not one of them had the a comprehension of the import of those words, that the whole thing hangs on them. And yet, who would you go to? Would you go to a lawyer and say, okay, here's a protocol forbidding that charge? Would you go to a banker and say, here's a protocol for making that kind of money? Would you go to a doctor and say, here's the protocol? And when you're told it, you say, oh, well, no, I'm not going to do it. I want to produce a result, but I don't want to do that. No? Okay. So how do you get that to happen? Gateway, Rockman needs to be open. The condition that will make that power active in you is the willingness to honor truth and love so much that you hold to it regardless of circumstances. Lip service won't do it. It must be a personal experience, personally experienced. If fear or hostility enters your words or your mind, you have not yet mastered my message. I came to connect you with the spirit of truth in you, not some outer authority. In Aramaic, my words pointed to these understandings, different from those that fill the mind of one trained in the ways of the world. There is not room in my intent for my intent and message in such a mind. That is why, unless they're ready to break free from the grip of the world mind, I chose simple fishermen, the untrained instead of the educated, to learn and teach my work. Do you recall how often and how many ways I said, why do you not understand my speech, even because you cannot hear my words? The mind structure and the ways of the world cannot actually perceive the intended meaning of my words because it cannot see past its own content, cannot produce realities that do not match what it thinks it already knows. It is wax gross, hypnotized by its own internal meaning. There is much to give up, much to make room for the understanding of my work, to be able to perceive me truly and accomplish what I did. To even hear me. By giving up, I did not mean sacrifice, but the release of the untrue, the misunderstandings, the hostilities, the fears, the behaviors in your life that only appear to work from you. You must disable the fear-based mind. It is not a giving up that means loss, but rather one that brings gain because it makes room for the blessings of truth. And it's not for the faint-hearted to move from a culture that has language that says, you made me angry, you made me sad, you made me afraid. Remember, anybody that uses that language is a card-carrying member of the one-world universal religion blame. If you don't train your mind to have a conversation about what you are waxed gross by, then there's never going to be room in that mind for truth. Notice there are those who promote victimhood as though it were a virtue. And tomorrow we'll start with that. Pardon me, Monday. Tomorrow we're off. And we hold the space for you to have an awesome weekend for those that are joining us for Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. Remember to do the writing of your mind shifter. And at 11 o'clock tomorrow, Eastern Time, will step into the Mind Shifter Systopic Breathing Club tomorrow and Sunday. If you would like to join us, you can do that still. If you drop Jeannie an email, jeannie@whyagain.org, we can get you set up to join us. And otherwise, have an awesome weekend. The best year yet of your eternal life's coming up. Look forward to sharing with you. Bless